it was almost spiritual. I'm not really a spiritual person, but this was sort of following in the footsteps of a childhood hero.
Kia ora everyone, that was Tim Sutton. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners.
Oh, hey Eugene, it's Matt.
Oh, hi Matt.
How's it going? Hey, you know how I've been working on that concept album for ages, and I was just at the sort of finishing stages and about to book some studio time?
No. Okay, well, yeah?
You'll never guess what happened, man. The weirdest thing. Someone, like, my house got broken into.
What?
Yeah, the house got broken into, and my ukulele was just smashed to pieces.
The pink one?
Yeah. No,
oh my gosh.
It's really odd, because it seems like the person who got in
knew
where the spare key was.
Yeah.
And my kids were home. So they were obviously, none of them were distressed by it, and the dog was in. So,
yeah.
And the person who smashed the ukulele went exactly to where it was.
What are you trying to say, Matt?
Well, nothing. It's weird. It's just weird. But hey, look, I guess what I'm saying is that ship for now has sailed.
But, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got another letter from Ultra. They are offering the Dirt Church Radio listeners 10% off if you go to ultrarunning.co.nz and purchase any pair of Ultra shoes, if you enter the promo code DCRSUX, that's DCR sucks. They were adamant that that's what we put in. So DCRSUX, they get 10% off. And also, they said that to buy us out of their contract was the words they used, that they'd give us 10% off as well. So the people who buy the Ultra shoes are happy. Their feet will be singing, you know, foot shape toe box, zero drop, all that jazz, power of three, all the good stuff. 10% off, so they get 10% off. We get 10% of whatever 10% off is. And if you enter the promo code DCR sucks. So DCR.
Wow. What was the website again? I'm going to write it down.
Ultrarunning.co.nz.
Ultra.
Yeah, Ultra.
RUNNING.co.nz.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hopefully I can save up for a new ukulele when those dollars and cents start rolling in.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm still a little concerned that you're accusing me of something.
I'm not accusing you of anything.
You sure? You don't want another letter, do you?
Okay. Well, look, I guess we'll catch up tomorrow.
That sounds good.
DCR sucks. DCR SUX.
Yeah.
Promo code.
On the Ultra Running website.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, bro. Bye.
Okay, bye. Dirt Church Radio.
Episode 28. Kia ora, everyone.
We made it.
It's been a minute, man, since we've spoken and hung out together.
Yeah, we had a bit of a... We pre-recorded some interviews.
We preloaded.
So it feels a bit like we've been away from each other for ages.
Probably the longest time ever.
Yeah.
I cope, though. What were you up to?
Well, part of the time, I was in Melbourne. Enjoying the heat. We went over there for a basketball tournament for our younger boy, Kieran, who also happens to be the editor. So two-thirds of the Dirt Church Radio podcast.
Trident.
Yeah, was on the road.
Yeah.
In Melbourne's heat.
How hot was it?
Got up to 44 one day.
That's stinking hot. That's really hot, eh?
Yeah. I tell you what, though. We were mostly in suburban Melbourne, and the running there was incredible.
Yeah, what was so incredible about it?
Urban trails, pathways. I remember coming up to one intersection on a pathway, and there was a sign that said one way... Essendon 23 kilometres, the city 19. So you could run on this pathway for a marathon.
Oh, wow.
And never cross a road. Yeah. And then the trails were great. I went to the Studley Park run on the Saturday, which is on trail.
Yeah.
Twisty, turny, hilly. The race director says, if this is your first time, just a warning, it's not going to be a PB. But it was super fun. It was really good. Enjoyed it. Yeah, good running in Melbourne. What about you?
Just been hanging out, doing nurse life and running.
Nurse life.
And, yeah.
Yeah. More painting?
No.
Painting's done.
Painting for now.
But,
yeah, super excited. Running a lot, actually. And, yeah, really, really excited about today's conversation. and running in general. And, you know, we...
You are running like a beast at the moment.
On all fours and naked.
I wasn't going to talk about that on the show, but, you know.
Push the analogy too far. But
no, you're running really well.
Yeah, it's the best I've felt in years.
Yeah, it shows. It shows. Years. And you actually, you can see the joy in your running too.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I feel joyful.
Yeah.
But look, this is coming out, Happy Waitangi Day.
Yeah.
New Zealand's National Day.
Yeah,
so Aotearoa New Zealand's National Day. Super cool, super important.
Yeah.
And well worth celebrating.
The day for you foreigners listening, when the Treaty of Waitangi was signed, first signed in Northland.
At Waitangi.
Kia ora, everyone.
Kia ora. All right, Tarawera this weekend.
The big show. It feels like the big show in town.
It is the biggest show of all.
Mm.
And for lots of reasons. Yeah. Take care, everyone. If it's as hot as it is at the moment, it's going to be hot. And we know that Kawerau in the last couple of weeks has been the hottest place in New Zealand. 34 degrees.
Yeah.
Which, compared to last year when it was a...
Yeah. It was warm, but it was wet.
Wet.
And Kawerau has that real heat that just kind of envelops you.
Yeah.
Feels like. So take care, everyone. I did see some people worried about rain again, but surely it can't be 2 years in a row. It's
trail running, man.
Exactly.
Deal with it.
Get a raincoat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excited. We're not coming to Tarawera for, annual leave reasons and...
Life
reasons. But someone who is coming to Tarawera is Mael Backhausen, him of his own episode of the show and seeming to feature very heavily in the last couple that we've done.
Yeah, it's like everyone we talked to.
Yeah, hanging out with Mael Backhausen.
I was in the middle of nowhere and I bumped into Mael Backhausen, and it seems to be like a prerequisite of everyone we talk to.
That's right.
Yeah, but anyway.
He's doing an Instagram takeover for us. Whoop, whoop. So...
What does that mean for us social media numpties like me?
I've given him the password to our account, which is dirtchurch1234, if you're interested. And
it's not.
It is. And he's going to do, he's going to do some content, man. It's all about the content.
Cool.
Yeah.
And he's content king.
He is actually the content king of Salomon.
That is so cool.
Expect a bump in quality, albeit short-lived.
Hey, you do a good job.
I do what
Instagrams.
I can.
Yeah, much better. Hey, the Twitter... We're up to 17.
17 followers. Yeah. That's amazing.
Including 3 Russian bots.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they verifiably Russian?
Yeah, they're influencing the show.
Are they?
Yeah. There's Robert Mueller's going to be on our tail very, very soon.
Fantastic.
Asking what's going on. No, anyway, you do a great job on the Instagram, but Mael Backhausen will do a splendid job too.
And speaking of that. Speaking of something that I saw on Instagram, Camille Herron.
Yeah.
Car crash.
Show. Yeah.
And, it shows you that, I don't know, she's been basically on top of the world.
Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, it's that shield of invisibility.
Or invincibility.
Invincibility.
That's probably why she got hit. She had an invincible car. She's testing out that new government and the invincible car, and it just... smashed right into her.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's okay.
Invincibility. Yeah. That shield of invincibility that she's had running wise. Yeah. Life is fragile, isn't it?
Life is fragile and life is beautiful, but she's okay.
Yeah. She's okay. Yeah.
And
so she got hit on the way to work.
Yeah.
Car came through and just smashed in her and flipped
it up. Was it Prince Philip?
It was Prince Philip moment. It wasn't actually Prince. Could have been.
Yeah. Well, that would have been, one of those perfect storms, eh? Invisible car and Prince Philip and disaster.
We hope she's okay. And we are recording this before Tarawera, but she was indicating on social media that she'd be okay to come down.
Yep.
So hopefully that's worked out. And all the best, Camille.
All the best.
Mm.
And call us.
Yeah. Reply to that email.
Yeah. Sent you. Call to action. Everyone, get Camille Herron to come on Dirt Church Radio.
Yeah.
It'd be like all our Christmases come at once.
That'd be cool.
But, moving...
We have a great Christmas present for us.
We've got an early Christmas present. My tree's still up. I don't know about you, but Tim Sutton is today's guest, and he is primarily interested in adventure running. So long missions, very inclement, steep, off-piste running. He is a beast, blindingly fast. He's won the Wu 2K Ultra Marathon, and he won the Tip Track Marathon this year, which is, if anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's running up and down the Tip Track in Wellington repeatedly, and that's steep as hell and gnarly. So he does like big
gnarly missions.
Gnarly missions.
Yeah.
And Tim was, he's an excellently nice man, and he's also one of the people who went down to attempt the Revenant this year, which I understand no one completed, so Scott got his wish.
Yes.
But Tim's coming on today to talk about that, but he also was very keen to just talk about adventure running in general and what he gets up to, so super excited about that.
Really good, interesting conversation about that kind of approach to running.
Yeah, and what it means and how it kind of differs. And it's just another kind of subset of our very varied sport. But look, stuff you should know.
Stuff you should know.
Stuff you should know.
Get that jingle.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. The big news, or it's big news to us, and it's big news to everyone, is that Iron Man, Wanda, the
group
that owns Iron Man and several other things, have acquired Tarawera.
Yeah. So, which is not, I mean, that's not breaking news. That's announced a couple of weeks ago now.
Yeah.
But we're still in the window.
Yeah, we're still in the window. So
we just thought we'd have a little bit of a riff about it.
Yeah, talk about it. Talk about this thing about people talk about commercialization.
Yep.
And is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? People talk about the commercialization of running and the commercialization of this and that, and talking about when running was grassroots. For my money, Tarawera was grassroots. Maybe the first 2 or 3 years that it was run.
Yeah.
Having spoken to Paul on the record, both on this podcast and in print about it, and, you know, several times, Paul's always been very clear that he wanted it to be Western States on a UTMB
type
format, and he wanted to rule the world, pretty much. Not in an evil way,
in a
very Paul Chartres way, but sort of stoically and, you know, rather pleasantly, but he wanted to make money and do this for a living.
He wanted it to be a big, big show.
And it is a big show.
It is a big show. Yeah. I mean, look at the last couple of years and look at this year. I mean, obviously, that's been influenced by the ownership change that happened, and presumably there's a bit more money to get athletes down here,
Absolutely.
Which explains why the banging field.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the things to say on the record from us is good on you.
Yeah, you know? Good on you.
Good on you. It's, you know, as Matt says, they've never made a secret of the fact that it's a commercial operation. And they've obviously got an offer they couldn't refuse, and so good on them. Don't have a problem with that at all.
At all.
And from people who've sort of been complaining about, well, not complaining, but voicing opinions about commercialization and so on, well, yeah, it's, you know, I think...
Well, there are other ways to express that. You know, if you're worried about commercialization, there are other ways to, express that through your life.
Yeah.
And the way that you choose to spend your money and do things. And
Or choosing events that aren't about
events that aren't about that.
Yeah. Sorry, that makes it sound like Tarawera is just about commercialization. Of course it's not. It's still got that great vibe. It's got a great feel to it. And it's got a great community around it. And I don't think any of that will change.
Not at all.
But... there are events that are much more low key, and you know, Riverhead Rampage, for instance.
Riverhead Rampage, March 9th, 2019.
Yeah. Brought to you by,
that's right. Brought to you by Hallertau Brewery.
Yeah,
and it's my birthday.
And it's your birthday.
Come and run.
And my wedding anniversary.
Woo.
There are those other events that don't have that kind of Naseby, Northburn.
And I'm hopeful that with more
Ultra-easy.
With more headroom and with more infrastructure behind them, it'll actually be better.
Yeah.
You know, at times it's been a stressful endeavor, I'm sure, for that team. And, what I'd like, here's another call to action. Apart from, the call to action is, if Iron Man are interested in acquiring a podcast, call us.
I don't see
really call us.
No, they need a trip. In their portfolio.
They don't have a trail running podcast.
True.
Okay, but anyway, an actual call to action. I'd like to see Tarawera implement the Ironman installment option for their entry fees.
Yeah.
That'd be a really, that would make the race far more accessible for far more people.
Yeah.
And certainly take
so, that. So that means, so you don't come pressure. Up with a lump sum
yeah.
payment, you can pay it off.
Yeah, over three installments right. also. And that
and
would
did you say too, you can defer your race?
Yeah, if you, defer your race for a year.
Wow. Mm. So that's, yeah, I mean, so there are going to be some changes, I'm sure, but yeah. there are going to be positive changes as well. And if Paul and Tim, Paul Charteris and Tim Day are still involved as they're going to be, I think, you know, I mean, they are the life and soul of that race. So good luck.
And I think as well, too, like for me, it comes down, and I said this on social media, I think about it from the race director's point of view. What it means is an income, a guaranteed income, and probably a big, deep breath out. So,
yeah.
Well done, dudes.
Yep. Cool.
Speaking of a grassroots race that we're very excited about.
Woo!
Yep. I say that like Ric Flair. Wu2K.
Mm.
Entries have opened.
And what does Wu2K stand for,
Matt? It's Wellington Urban Ultra. And the 2K is down to the elevation profile of the 42K event.
So that means 2,000 metres.
That's much more than that.
But they're liars.
They're liars.
Mm. But 2K sounds better than
3.6 or whatever it was. Yeah. So, entries opened last week. In fact, entries open as of today while we're recording. We're going to be there. It's going to be super good. We're going to do a live show. It's going to be super good. And we're going to run the bastard. And
when is it? It's in July.
July, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got plenty of time to train up for it.
And as an extra
the
special
live show, I mean. I'm talking to you.
Yeah, we'll train up for the live show. It'll be sick. But also, stuff you should know is Gareth, the race director, has given us a free entry to give away to you good people.
Yeah, not given us a free entry.
Yeah, I'm going to carry Eugene on one of those massive, we're going to wear a long coat and he'll go on my shoulders.
No, we're paying for entry. But there is going to be a free entry available for us to give away.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a giveaway.
Trying to decide what to do. I'm sort of erring on the side of name the Rottweiler that's barking in the background while we record this podcast. But we'll come back to you.
We'll leave that to the headhunters. Mm. Keep your ears peeled for that. Probably do that next week. We'll figure out the details of the competition and how you can win this free entry to W2K.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool.
Greatest run ever.
Mm. So the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. Doesn't have to be a race.
Or a run.
Or mountain summit.
It does have to be a run.
Yeah, it does have to be a run. Although we have had some greatest runs ever that don't have much running component to them.
But like that dude who did the Raglan Trail. Anyway.
Just send us in. Hey, and you need to send them in because we're running. We're
the barrel is getting to the bottom.
Yeah, we're like hand to mouth.
Yeah. We're living greatest run ever to greatest run ever.
Yeah. So dirtchurchradio@gmail.com or via social media where you can use hashtag greatest run ever.
So here we go. This is Jody Arnott. Hey guys, love the show. I've been meaning to write in about my hashtag greatest run ever for a while now, but it wasn't until I was recently catching up on some missed Dirt Church Radio episode that I was inspired to do it. I spent a while thinking about my greatest run ever. It would have been easy to talk about my first marathon, the Tarawera 42K in 2016, or my fastest half marathon, the Hamilton half a year later. But I realized that a greatest run isn't necessarily your fastest time or longest distance, but one that no matter how hard it is, you make it to the finish line. The 24-kilometer Waitomo trail run in 2017 was my greatest run ever. It was the infamous Y Slow-Mo mud run, but despite the weather, I was enjoying it. People were in good spirits, I made a few friends while trudging along in the mud, and the scenery was pretty amazing. It was more of an adventure hike than a race. Unfortunately, at about 14 kilometres in, while jogging down a hill, I landed full force in a fairly large hole that was hidden by mud. As I landed, I slipped and fell sideways, and my foot wedged in the hole. With nowhere to go, my ankle bent at an angle it wasn't made for, making a popping sound that was heard by passing runners.
I'm wincing.
Yeah, my toes are curling in the bad direction. The pain was excruciating, but I put on a brave face for runners that were passing me, asking if I was okay. At the time, I thought it could possibly be a strain, but I didn't think anything was broken. Due to the remoteness of the area, I didn't have much choice other than to keep going, so I hobbled onwards at a pace of about 3 kilometres an hour with my foot swelling up to about twice its normal size. To be honest, it's a bit of a blur now. To cut a long story short, I made the finish after about 6 hours thanks to a mixture of stupidity, sheer determination, and a bit of ego. X-ray results the next day put an end to my running for about 6 months with multiple fractures and torn ligaments. Far out. Walking was extremely difficult for the following 3 weeks, and it took about 8 months for the pain to fully disappear. So it was probably the worst run ever, but
was she just thinking that? Yeah.
You're setting the bar pretty low. But it was also probably the best run ever. Sheer determination to get that damn finisher's medal got me to the finish line, as well as my own stubbornness to not give up. Looking back, the smart move would have been to DNF, but I'll always remember the feeling of crossing that finish line. I entered the Waitomo Trail event the following year, in 2018, and finished unscathed. I probably won't do it again. Probably.
Whoa.
Thanks, Jody.
Yeah.
That's an excellent run. And you're and well done. I salute your courage and, yeah. Pain threshold and grit and determination and all those things.
Yeah. Wow.
Whew. Keep them coming in. Yeah. Greatest run ever. Send have to be to a us. Run.
Yep. Yep.
But not a race.
They don't have to be that painful.
No.
Mm. So Tim Sutton.
Tim Sutton.
Famous Matt Raymond buyer.
Tim Sutton is from Wellington, and he works as a furniture upholsterer at a boutique kind of furniture upholstery place. He's the inaugural Wu 2K 62-kilometre winner. In fact, he passed me at a point in the race, and him and Andy Good were the only two. They were first and second in the ultra. They were the only two people that passed where I was in the field, which was cool. That was sort of, but they were going so quickly. Like, I thought they must have been lost.
Was it uphill, downhill?
It didn't matter. They were going... No. It was climbing up a hill.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
They just come flying past.
Yeah, flying past. Yeah, amazing. And so cheerful with it too. Tim is the infamous Tip Track Marathon winner, multiple Tararua Range Transit finisher, and he's a Revenant original. He's also finished the North Burn. His bio reads adventurer, mountain runner, and occasional racer. Tim states that the outdoors are his happy place. Being a family man, Tim's training focuses on quality, not quantity, with the focus on adventure to keep him fresh and interested. Coming to trail and ultra running through multi-sport, Tim is a passionate advocate for the more adventurous side of our amazing sport. And the most professional bio I've ever done.
That is the most. It's like you prepared it earlier.
It is. Here's one I prepared earlier. But anyway, look, let's get on to this conversation. We're super stoked to have Tim with us. And what he has to say is just fantastic. So without further ado, the most excellent Tim Sutton.
Dirt Church Radio.
Okay, kia ora everyone. We're here with the indomitable Mr. Tim Sutton from Miramar in Wellington. Kia ora, Tim. How are you doing?
Kia ora, fellas. Good to talk to you.
That's awesome. How's the body recovering after the Revenant? Sorry to launch straight into it, but I'm desperate to know.
The body's sweet. We didn't really get deep enough into it to do any permanent damage. So maybe next time, eh?
And I mean, what I guess to... You know, we really want to talk about, you know, as you said, like adventure running and the more kind of serious missions that you guys seem to do down your neck of the woods. But I guess touching off on the Revenant, you know, what was it like?
It was everything we thought it was going to be and nothing we thought it was going to be, which kind of sounds impossible, but... Yeah, I guess we knew the distance, we knew the time, and we knew the elevation. Through some newsletters to the competitors, we gained a bit more information in the months leading up to it. But there was a lot that was kept secret until the briefing the afternoon before it kicked off. It was... They definitely had a lot of surprises up their sleeves.
Was
I think that's what it's all about.
Was there anything in that briefing that you heard that made you think, oh my goodness, what am I doing?
I think we were all there for a challenge, and the numbers alone were enough to put you off if you're going to be put off.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing at the briefing for us was... We all turned up there at 4 o'clock and expecting we'd get the maps and then take off home. And we'd been told that we'd be going up to the top of the mountain at 12:30. So I think everyone had a bit of shut-eye planned. And anyway, they gave out the maps and then said, oh, and by the way, forget what we told you about the start time. we need you back here at 9. So that was an immediate change of plan. And I hadn't had any sleep during the day. We'd been doing lots of stuff with families, climbing some big hills and doing some swimming on Lake Wakatipi.
Quality taper time.
Yeah, quality taper time. But yeah, so instantly there was going to be an element of sleep debt going into the race.
So did you mean 0900 or 2100?
2100.
Wow. Okay, so they brought it forward by more than 24 hours.
No, 3 hours.
Three hours.
So do you mean 12:30 is in half past midnight?
Yeah. And so that nap that we'd planned, or that I'd planned anyway, was,
gone.
A non-thing.
Wow. And then, once you got into it, I mean, it just looked like there was a lot of issues finding checkpoints and so on. What was it about it that sort of slowed you down to the extent that it did?
When we started the race, it starts from the ski hut, the historic ski hut up the top of the Nevis Road, and as we drove up the hill towards the start, we started getting into the clag. And so as we got further and further up, the mist got thicker and thicker. And so when the gun went and we actually set out, the visibility was really low. And it was 11 o'clock at night. So it was dark and fairly limited visibility with the mist. And straight into it, which is, it was all pretty exciting. I guess the nav was the nav is straightforward nav. Like if you're familiar with using a map and compass, there were no tricks about that, and the checkpoints were exactly where they said they were on the map. So the course was plotted out really well. But when you got to the checkpoints, it was a matter of looking in the right direction and being in exactly the right spot to actually spot the checkpoints.
Right.
Wow. And what is the terrain like? I mean, it's hard to conceptualize.
That was the biggest thing for me because my background obviously is up in the North Island. And so my training ground is the Tararuas, which is all really narrow ridge lines that are fairly easy to follow, and tons more bush, whereas it's all on Blackmore Station, so it's basically a high country station with some remnant bush down in some of the river valleys, but largely snow tussock and heaps of Spaniard grass, or bastard grass, as we like to call it in the Tararuas. So that hides in the snow tussock. And so I think I probably lost count at about the 500th time that I got stabbed in the ankles.
Right. Wow. So it's really kind of analogous with I know that Scott Worthington himself, he talks about it, it's trying to be analogous with the Barclay in terms of you had your own version of the briars there.
Yeah. And there were briars. There was Matagorri, and then there was beautiful beech forest for the wormhole, as they called it, checkpoint 8. And that was quite reminiscent of the eastern Tararua, so I loved it in there. And then we had the Nokomai River, which was really the only point where you didn't have any navigation choice, and that was awesome. They basically, I think it's a bit of a dock concession going through there, and so they basically gave us a 100-meter corridor where we had to stick to the Nokomai River, and so you could only go 50 meters on either side of it, so following game trails and up the river itself. And because of that, you got to really experience that river, and that river is just stunning. It was probably definitely my favorite part of the course. But I'd say it's very different from, like, I can't comment from experience, but I'd say it's very different as far as terrain goes from the Barclay marathons. Just in that it is changing. There's a lot of tussock, and a lot of that tussock is really high, so it's quite hard travel.
Right, yeah. Like finding foot placement or security and the sort of visual security.
No foot placement's the same as the one before.
Yeah.
And most of the time you can't see where you're putting your feet.
And I heard on social media that, you know, where you began to come unstuck was you lost a 6-hour bottle of fuel.
Yeah. That was a bit of a bugger because it was pretty early in the race. We'd just gone through checkpoint 3, and I'd teamed up with a local runner, Angus Watson. We'd actually gone into it with a plan of working together,
right?
Before we started the race, and we went over the maps together, and we'd just hooked up with a fella from Wanaka, Ian Evans. And that was dropping down to checkpoint 3, and we saw all of these other competitors that had kind of dropped down at the same time, getting drawn out by all of these little false spurs out to the right. And so we were sort of thinking, well, we don't want to go down there. And it was cool because Ian had the same idea. And so while we watched all of these headlights disappear down into the mist and in the wrong direction, Ian joined up with us, and we became a little band of three. And so after checkpoint 3, we'd dropped down to a fence line and had jumped over because we thought there was a four-wheel drive track on the other side, but it was pretty overgrown. And so jumping back, I took a trip and didn't notice at the time. And, well, I'm thinking this is where it happened anyway, and got down to the bottom of the valley and went to fuel up, and the bottle was missing.
Ooh, no.
And so with a 50, well, as it turned out, a 15-hour lap, I ended up having to stretch 9 hours of powder out over, it was 15 hours and 15 minutes. And so I went into fat burning pretty early on in the lap, and,
yeah,
and once you go into that mode, it's pretty hard to pull it back.
Right. And do you follow like a low carb, higher fat diet? Is that?
No, not at all. So I really rely on the carbs.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, so that was pretty disastrous for that to have happened.
I don't know. It didn't slow me down in the first lap, but I know that in the last 2 hours before the transition, I definitely noticed the fatigue, where usually 13 hours into a run, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
And so the plan was when we got into transition, I glued on a semi fake smile, for the family, and figured I'd just shovel in as much food as I could, and hopefully turn things around.
Yeah.
But it was pretty early on in the second lap. We'd just got the first checkpoint in the second lap, which was obviously in the opposite direction from the first lap. And we were heading up the first big climb. And that's the thing with the climbs down there. You've got good 900-meter climbs. And so we were about a third of the way up that, and my legs just weren't working. And so Angus was pretty keen to give it a good crack, and so we said go for it. And then shortly after that, I just said to Ian, look, I'm going to be towing the chain now, so go for it. And so they took off. I decided I'd have a lie down. So I lay down in the middle of this four-wheel drive track that I was on, with my feet sticking up in the air, up the hill, my head sticking down the hill, try to drain some of the shit that had built up in my legs out. And I was lying right in the middle of a Spaniard weed, and I didn't care. It was bliss. and I could glance across the valley from where we were across to the ski hut. We were sort of level with the ski hut at that stage, sort of thinking, oh, I'm sure that they're all watching me at the moment. And it turns out that they were. but yeah, I just lay there for a couple of minutes and then figured it wasn't doing me any good. So I just carried on from there.
Sorry,
carry on.
I was going to say, was it at that point that you kind of realised that the time, you know, cutoffs weren't going to be doable for you, or did you still have a dream of carrying on at that stage of making it?
Yeah, at that stage, I just decided I'd push on. It was still not that long since we'd been through and got some decent food on board.
So you're just waiting for that to kick in.
Yeah. And so I plodded up the hill to the summit, and then ticked off. Started on the downhill from the top of the hill to the next checkpoint, and at that stage it would have been really easy running, and I just couldn't get the legs going. There was nothing in them but a walk, and so that's when it started to look a bit shaky.
Right.
And then back down into the Nokomai. The Nokomai was lots of ups and downs in and out of the river, and we'd smash that in the first lap. We'd all been taking turns at the front so that you could take a rest of route finding, and we ran that all the way through, and I reckon if there's any FKTs through there, we've probably got it. but going back, it really was a plod. And so at that stage I pretty much knew that any chances of making it within the 30 hours were out the window.
Yeah.
So what time, I mean, I guess that speaks to the difficulty of the event in terms of, you know, it's not like a traditional ultra, is it, where you can kind of, you could get to another aid station and fill up. You've got the unexpected start time, starting at night, the difficulty of route finding, the difficulty of probably having to do like a jigsaw puzzle or a hard Sudoku or something that, you know, like one of these other surprises that they had for you and all of that. And I mean, you blazed past me at the Wutu K like I was standing still. And I think about sort of an athlete of your caliber, if you're having to walk something out, it must have been pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think part of that, we burnt up a lot of extra energy finding some of the checkpoints. Like, you get to them, but then you'd have to really find them.
Right, yeah. And so you're like within proximity, but you're not quite there.
Yeah.
Or just seeing
and
it.
So I actually came out of the race saying, there's no chance you could do it. Even if you're a world-class athlete, there's no way you could break those four laps. And then, having had the benefit of a bit of time, and I've done a lot of thinking about it, and gone back over where we could have made up time, and I look at least four checkpoints where we probably lost about half an hour just mucking around or working the nav out.
Yeah. Right.
And so instantly there's 2 hours. And so if you can bank 2 hours in the first lap, then you can take the second lap a bit more easy, and then therefore hopefully have a reasonable amount of time up your sleeve for a sleep after the first couple of laps. A sleep being sort of 40 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But just to get rid of that mental fatigue, because I think that's probably one of the biggest things that's going to start getting you as you get deeper into it.
Absolutely.
Being able to keep the brain switched on and not making mistakes, because I think if you're gonna beat it, it's got to be pretty much error free, along with a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
And I'll leave the, but like, I don't know if you've seen the Where the Dreams Go to Die.
I made sure I watched that last
year. Yeah, and he was exactly the same, wasn't he, Gary Robbins? In his second attempt, he was so dialed in, and he was essentially, even with error free, you know, like he was error free up until he wasn't, but in terms of his transitions, in terms of everything like that, he was just, everything was so, you had to control every aspect that you could control. Hey,
absolutely. And I think that's the benefit of having done the race now. I think that was the whole idea, I think, for Leroy and Scott, is to create something where there is definitely a benefit to the athletes that have already done it.
So,
and it's something that you go to learn.
Scott and Leroy made no secret of that, did they? That they didn't expect anyone to finish. But were you surprised that no one made it past two laps? Was that? I
was pretty surprised that nobody made it past two laps. Well, Al got to the two laps, and I think that was awesome. He knew that the time wasn't on, but he just kept on pushing. And I think that's pretty commendable. And should be acknowledged. I think a lot of people were surprised at how far people did get through. Or didn't get through.
By how much it was missed.
But it's the first year, and so I don't know much about the history of the Barclay marathons. But I sort of wonder what happened in their first couple of years.
Oh look, more people have landed on the moon than have finished that race, and like even this year, you know, when Gary Robbins came back for a third crack at it, no one made it past what they call the fun run, which is three laps. Yeah. Well, he was the only person, and it was the worst weather ever. So it's totally dependent. Yeah. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, I thought that if anyone was going to take it out, it would be you or Sean Collins. And, you know, I really sort of thought, I wonder if, because, you know, we talked to Scott and he's a good lad and he was talking a good game, you know, he's a good chatter. And I thought, wow, I don't know about these Navy SEAL dudes, but I'm pretty sure either Tim or Sean could give it a good crack.
In terms of runners, in terms of navigability and that adventure background.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I think there was a lot to actually having experienced New Zealand conditions as well. We had a big advantage over the American guys. Yeah. And I mean, to do what they did with training in Florida, area. I mean, they hats off to them.
Yeah, right.
They came and they did incredibly well.
Oh, there's no disrespect there at all. You know.
Absolutely. And that was... but there is that. Like, I mean, with a reason. Like, I've got a reasonable amount of backcountry experience. To be fair, my map and compass nav is only something that I've really started to get on top of in the last couple of years.
Right.
And so I don't have a long history of things like God's Own navigation or anything like that. Like, I mean, Scott's background is obviously as a God's Own navigator. But then I've spent a good amount of time with Dean Ford, another Wellington runner, who's an incredibly good God's Own navigator. And we've spent a good amount of time wandering around off trail in the Tararuas. And I think there's one thing about training in the Tararuas is if you can navigate in the dense bush of the Tararuas where you can't see any of your features terribly well, then that's going to prepare you for most things.
Yeah. And we'll move off the Revenant very soon. I just wanted to touch on one more thing that I think came through really strongly, which seemed to be the camaraderie of not only the people involved, but the crew. It seemed like it was almost like a bonding moment, that whole event.
Well, that started last year for me. Right from the very, very outset, once my entry had been accepted, I approached Leroy and Scott with a couple of questions just via email. And almost immediately, Scott called me back. And we ended up, this is the middle of work, and we ended up on a phone call for a good half an hour, three quarters of an hour. Just having a yarn about adventuring and gear and just geeking out. And so from the outset, the contact with those guys has been incredible. And I asked them whether they were open to people going and recceing the area, And they said, no, we want to keep it fair for everyone. And so for people that can't actually make it down there, they don't want people to see the actual course itself. And they wanted to keep it as a surprise. But how about this for an idea? We're planning on going doing a little expedition from Alexandra up across to Garston through the Garby Mountains. Would you like to come and join us? And so fairly shortly after that, I had tickets booked to head down in November. And from the moment we arrived down there, where Scott and Leroy picked us up at the airport, they just turned it on for us. And so, the hospitality was amazing. We didn't make it across because it was just after that last cold snap had gone and dumped a whole lot of snow through there. And so we ended up having a fairly exciting introduction to that part of the country anyway, because there's tons of snow and the weather was rubbish, and we got to test all of our gear, and I learned a thing about how big the country is and how easy it is to underestimate that when you're navigating down there. So from the outset, those guys have been amazing, and so it's really built this this friendship from early on, before the event even happened. And they've been like that to all of the other competitors. I think the American guys ended up staying with Scott afterwards and heading out for some missions with him. And so, and for those guys, it's not about setting up an event that's going to make money. Yeah. It's about setting up something cool. And I can really relate to that. Like more and more now, I'm drawn to adventures rather than racing. And so this was the adventure with the added bonus of having a race involved. Yeah. But to them, and I think to me and a lot of the other competitors, it was really just about the adventure.
And it says, I mean, like looking at your bio on New Zealand Trail Run, it says, you know, like mountain runner, adventurer and occasional racer. I mean, what was it that first led you to kind of step out of the boundaries of, you know, traditional trail running, traditional ultramarathon running into that kind of wilder side of it?
A race. He's a certain gentleman. He's actually been mentioned on here before.
It's not Mal Backhausen, is it?
No. It's Chris Martini.
Okay.
Martin. Yeah. Who's a bit of a ringleader down here of our sort of unofficial running club, the Wellington Big Sunday Run Group.
Right. Oh yes, we got sort of got dragged into this war between you guys and the Worm.
Yeah, there's no.
No,
war.
I'm just being
there's
a no dick.
don't believe everything you've been told.
I've been to the chat rooms.
Well, I don't think there's a war.
No,
I haven't been caught up in it anyway. I ran one of his races. He's Race Direct's three events down here, soon to be four actually, and one of them being the Aorangi Undulator.
Oh, fantastic! The 3-day one.
And
that's sorry? The 3-day.
Yeah, I started out with the 1-day, and had a fairly good run there, and shortly after that, I got an email from Chris. I actually got to the end of that run, and they hadn't finished setting up the finish line area. So he was sitting in his car texting when I came out of the bush, and so they had to revise their finish time expectations after that. But we got in an email conversation, and I got an email back from Chris shortly after that race saying, here's your next challenge, mate, and it was he'd forwarded me an email conversation between Chris Swallow, a local runner here, and Grant Guise, talking about the Tararua SK.
Now, what is SK?
So SK, the S stands for Scormans,
okay,
and the K is Kaitoki, and so originally the SK it was. It was conceptualized by trampers back in the early 60s, I believe. And up until then, it was a multi-day tramp. Like you're looking 5 to 7 days to tramp it. And somebody, I think, in the Tararua Tramping and Mountaineering Club, I've probably got that name wrong, and somebody will correct me. There was a conversation that maybe it could be done in 48 hours. And so Schoolman's was the farm, I believe, at the Putara end, which is up near Ikaruhuna,
right,
where the Mangatanoka River comes out. And there was a hut there. And so the original idea was to catch a train out after work on a Friday, then fast tramp the whole route from the Schoolman's hut road end to Kaitoki at the hut end at the other end of the range in 48 hours and in time to get back for work on Monday morning.
Fresh as a daisy.
And so I think that originally that got conquered in about 60, or the mid-60s anyway. My dates are pretty bad. And so ever since then, trampers have been testing themselves against the route. And there were a set of rules that until recently, when mountain runners started having a look at it, that they had to go by, and that you had to wear tramping boots. There was no running. I forget the list, but it was definitely tramping orientated and suffering orientated. And then I won't go too much into the history because I'll get too much of it wrong, but basically Colin Rolfe, in I think it was 1991, finally cracked the 24-hour right. mark down the main range of the Tararuas, and that suddenly opened up this whole new goal.
Sub 24. How far is it?
So the figures are misleading. So the distance wise, it's somewhere between 70 and 80 k's, depending on whose GPS you believe. Right. And the elevation is somewhere between 7,000 and 7,500 meters of ascent and descent. But it's just really gnarly, so it's slow. And if you're not going up, you're going down, and if you're not going down, you're going up. And it's through tree roots and tussock, and yeah, it's epic.
Who has the FKT?
So Sam McCutcheon and Danny Garrett blew through there a couple of years ago. I was actually up on another mission having a go at the 1500s. When they went flying down the range, and I was standing across on a sort of slightly parallel ridge, looking across as they dropped down off Dundas, which is one of the big peaks along the Dundas Ridge, and they were just smoking. They just saw these two little dots that were racing along the ridge line, and they blew the record out of the water. So it'll take a fast set of feet to get that.
Do you know what it is?
Oh, put me on the spot. 18 hours. Far out.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, so the 24-hour challenge has been whittled down to an 18-hour challenge.
So, I mean, that was the challenge that was set for you, and obviously one that you accepted, but what was it that, you know, made you think, yeah, this is where I want to be rather than in the standing on start lines all the time?
I guess... My introduction to mountain running was back when I got into the Coast to Coast.
Right.
And they've got there's an epic mountain run as part of the course. And so that was my first real introduction to backcountry mountain running. And so for the second time that I competed in the Coast to Coast, I did a lot more training in the Tararuas and discovered this real love for it. And then we decided we're going to have a family, and multi-sport took up too much time. And so I decided I'd focus on the running. Started getting results, but also at the same time I was doing these bigger and bigger runs into the hills as training and as base training over winter, and found that I like the freedom of being able to pick your own time to do it. So if you're going, even if you're going for an FKT, nobody told you when to do it, nobody told you how to do it. It was basically an adventure, albeit one trying to go fast, but an adventure, and usually somewhere you hadn't been before. So for a lot of the mountain runs, the really long ones, I'll do some recces of some of the trickier sections, so that when I get there, it's not going to be totally brand new, and the nav won't be an issue. But I guess going back to when Chris first suggested the SK to me, I'd only ever run 5 hours at a push. I think my longest run was the Tararua Mountain Race, which goes over the Southern Crossing down in the Tararuas. And so the biggest question for me was, well, can I actually run for 24 hours? let alone down a mountain range. And so my first goal before I did that was to do a big run. And so my first real adventure run with no goal other than to see how I'd go was up in Taranaki. We were up there for Christmas, and I'd seen Steve Neri's and Mal's photos from their up down, Mal Law's photos from their Taranaki up down and around. And it looked epic.
Yeah.
And I'd always wanted to go to summit Mount Taranaki, and we'd always talked with about it with my dad and my brother. And so seeing as we're all together up there, I think it was the day after Boxing Day, the weather looked reasonably good for it. And so we drove up the mountain, and I took off up to the summit, and they were going to hike it while I spent the day out in the hills. And yeah, I got around there in a little bit under 12 hours, and all of a sudden I knew, and I felt like I could keep on running at the end of that. And so I'd sort of broken down some barriers about what I believed I was capable of. And so the SK was on, and that happened about a month later when the weather came through for it. And so ever since then, That sort of blew away my expectations of what we can do. And so it's now it's have a look at a map and
where. And how many times next. Have you completed the SK now?
Maybe a few more than is healthy.
Are we talking double figures?
There are actually three main routes. So you've got the main range, which is sort of the holy grail. It's the always going to be the longest one, but then you've also got the Tarn Ridge SK or the Eastern Range, and then the valleys. So the valleys goes all the way down the Eastern Valleys. Same starting points and finishing points, but three very different runs. And Graham Dingle actually made the SK semi-famous for a little bit, running the Tarn Ridge SK, and he set the record at the time, going from Putara Hut to Smith Creek Shelter, which is just short of Kaitoki, and I think it was 18 and a half hours. And I remember reading about this as a kid and just being blown away by how somebody could run for that long. And so I did the valleys after the main range, because it was snowing up in the hills, so that seemed wise to stay down low. And then save the Tarn for last. And to me, it was almost spiritual. I'm not really a spiritual person, but this was sort of following in the footsteps of a childhood hero. And the Tarn, to me, having done all three, is by far the most, it's the most complete for me. It's more of a big mountain route. The Eastern Ridge, there's no trails along it. There's a bit of a footpad from deer and trampers, but there's no marked route, and so you feel like you're really out in the wilderness. And so I've done those three, and then I'm currently working my way back up the range. So I've done the main range in reverse, and done the valleys in reverse just before Christmas is my last training run for the Revenant. And so I guess that means I've got one more to do to get the set.
So what you're describing really is kind of, it sounds like the spirit of adventure and mountaineering rather than what sort of most sort of trail runners would, you know, there's a sort of, like, I'm trying to think, you know, we're talking to you the week before Tarawera, and yes, what you're describing is actually quite different to that. Not putting that down at all, you know, not making a judgment about either, but it's just different, isn't it? It's almost like a different sport.
I wouldn't even call it a sport. I don't reckon. Like, for me, I've still got racing if I want to go and run fast, and I do have a competitive side to me, but it's probably more because I don't like running in crowds, so I've got to run fast.
The last time I saw you were by yourself. I mean, you were being chased by Andy Good, but you held him off, so you do all right either way.
Yeah,
but I understand that.
I love running with people. Like, I mean, a big part of getting into the hills in between the speed challenges is getting out there with mates that are into the same thing. And so a lot of the time over winter, I'll try to get a mission in every month. And a lot of the time that's with a mate or two. And that camaraderie, there's something that it does to friendships, being out in the wild and actually having to have trust in each other as well.
Absolutely.
But you don't need to have known somebody very long to feel like you know them really well.
Yeah. No, there's that shared bond and to use the word in its purest sense, it's a very intimate thing that we do. And I think it's Absolutely. Interesting that thing of, you talk about adventure, and I guess the thing with adventure is adventure is whatever you think it is. So it's whatever the person who's having that adventure thinks it is, you know. And I find myself, I know more sort of drawn to that adventurous side of things. I want to go out and kind of not necessarily push boundaries in terms of I ran for 4 days or whatever, but like, from my own sense, you know, what I can, so I really
take yourself out of that comfort zone. And
so have you ever thought of doing any of the longer international races, like the one that springs to mind that would probably be right up your alley, something like Tour de Jones in Italy?
I'd love to, and it just comes back to the reason I got out of multi-sport, and that's because we've got a family, and and even during the training for the Revenant, I found myself out on my long runs, like Ruby's 4 now, and I found myself out on the long runs sort of wondering, what am I missing out on when I'm not there? And you only get to do that once. So my running's probably going to go way on for a good couple of decades, as long as I don't destroy myself. And I won't be getting any faster, but there'll be opportunity to do those bigger ones if I still want to later on down the track. I'd love to. I'd look at something like the Dragon's Back.
Right, yeah.
Which is actually where I think Chris Martin got the idea for the A100, putting on a stage race. And I love the look of that and the thing of getting yourself going every day and managing the pace so that you can go every day. Like with the A100, that was probably still to this day is my favourite trail race, because of it's got an adventure element. It's got the 3 days; they're all very different, and you've really got to manage yourself to make sure that you can still run and run well on that last day. So there's a whole lot of things that you're balancing there, as well as the adventure to take your mind
absolutely
off the hurt.
And that's really lovely to hear you say. You know, it sounds like your priorities are right where they should be. And again, it brings you back to the nature of true adventure, as you can adventure where you are. But it seems like as well, and you're not the first person from Wellington that we spoke to. You know, we spoke to Marianne Elliott.
Who, by the way, accused you of being...
She accused
you of being an alien.
I'm not an alien. I'm not an alien. We've had this conversation. I didn't deny it, though, when she brought it up when we were running up the tip track.
Tim, because we're both quite inquiring gentlemen, and saying I'm not an alien is just the type of thing an alien would say.
It's true. Yeah.
So we'll hold judgment. We'll reserve judgment on that.
We're going to need more evidence. Yeah.
They didn't prepare me for this grilling at alien school.
You admitted that. We gotcha. No, what is it about Wellington, though, that just seems to... It is, and you know, I was joking before, like there's a wonderful community. It does have, it's not homogenous, you know, it's varied, it's diverse. The people who, you know, do, some of them are bloody at the Treasury one day and then they're in the Tararuas the next, or there's people, you know, running Mount Vic on the Tuesday Spectacular, or is it Thursday Spectacular? I can never remember, but you know, like the Tuesday Spectacular.
I'm a big Sunday runner and I know about the worm runs. It can't be battle.
Or is that gathering intelligence?
Yeah. What is it about Wellington?
I think we're incredibly lucky in our trail systems. We're surrounded by hills, and I've been living here my whole life and I'm still finding new trails. And so, like, I work in Kaiwharawhara, which is around near the Ngaronga Gorge, yep. and live in Miramar, but I can run probably about 70% on trails home if I want to. And so you can just link all of these amazing trail networks together. And then be running through the middle of town sort of 10 minutes later. And I think it's got this wildness, like we've got this reputation for wind, but that also means that it feels very clean. And when that wind goes away, then you get that polar opposite where, as they say, Wellington on a good day, I don't know, there's nothing like having that one-off day where it's not blowing a gale up on the skyline, looking at all these points that you're going to go to on a 30K run home.
Wow, yeah, and I have that experience, you know, like the first W2K was Wellington on a good day, wasn't it? I mean, it was pretty much perfect conditions. It was bluebird. It was pretty warm by the end of it. And you do, yeah, you get that sense that Wellington kind of crouches into the landscape, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you've got all sorts of different training grounds. Like you've got the Tararuas, which I spend a lot of time in, but I've also spent heaps of time over behind Wainui in the Rimatakas. And it's all within driving distance. So that's a 45-minute drive, the Tararuas, or a 45-minute drive. And now I'm sort of playing in these places that my parents used to take me for bushwalks. And so I get to run these trails that seem like absolute monsters. Felt like you were walking all day. And they're just my little warm-up before you hit the river or start climbing a mountain. You've got wild when you need it. On the doorstep.
It's a special, you know, when we first emigrated here from the UK when I was 4 years old, we lived in Wainui, we lived in Ōtaki and then Wainui Amata. And my dad would take me into the Rimutaka Forest and by the river. And I remember, and it still sticks with me to this day, that hot pine needle smell. You know, in summer where you get that really distinctive smell of...
Yeah, and those memories never leave you, and they keep on coming back to you every time you go in there and lace the shoes
maybe
up.
That's why I live next to a huge pine forest.
I think it's those seeds that are
absolutely
planted.
And it is a special yeah. place.
And I think going that sort of takes me back to your question about these big overseas events. And to me, there's still so much of New Zealand I haven't seen, and I've always felt so blessed to be born down here. Like to me, I seriously think that we're in the best part of the world. And so before I start booking expensive plane rides overseas to go running around in somebody else's mountains, I think that it'd be a massive waste not to see more of our country.
Agreed.
Gorge myself.
Yeah,
that's
a good point, man. And it's I guess for nothing else, it's not cheap, is it? Chasing hills around the world.
No. Well, even getting down to somewhere like Garston, I ended up having to organise a fundraiser, and people were incredibly
right.
generous. I tried to provide a decent amount of entertainment in the process.
What was the what were you doing, dancing or?
No, I organised my first fundraiser was a thing called How Many Tippies and Timmy. And I timed it to be the day after the Wu2K last year, and I talked to Gareth to make sure he didn't mind me sort of promoting it a little bit, and basically ran a guessing game for people's loose change as to how many meters of vert I'd get running from dusk till dawn, dawn till dusk, sorry. Up and down the tip track.
For those who don't know, the tip track in Wellington is fairly infamous. How far is it up? What's the distance to the top?
Oh, it's only about 450 metres from the bottom road to the top road, but that's over. It's 3.5k to the top, 3.5k back down to the bottom. So you gain the height pretty quickly, and it's pretty gnarly underfoot, but it's also really accessible, and it's I've always used it to check out my fitness, because I know what sort of times I can go up and down there. So before I've got an event, I'll spend a fair bit of time with it. So me and the tippy know
and
each
how many
other
tippies
well.
Are in Timmy?
How many tippies are in Timmy? That time it was just short of 11, I believe. And it was awesome, because a whole lot of the volunteers and organisers turned up from the Wu2K turned up on the Sunday after prize giving. Gareth came up for a lap. Brent came up for
awesome.
A number of laps. Stu came up. He did a half marathon up there with me. And Barrett Hocking, Grant guys and Sean Collins, I couldn't carry on, but basically I had company for all but one of the laps, and for the last couple, Marianne came for the last one. That's where she quizzed me on being an alien or not.
We'll reserve our judgment on that one. Rad. Hey, look, Tim, we're at that. I mean, thank you so much. It's been really enlightening speaking to you, and we're really excited. We're both doing the Wu2K. We're coming down to run it. We're doing the 62, and we're totally stoked to get back down to Wellington. But it is, and
fantastic.
Hopefully we'll catch up with you then, but it's that time of the show when we ask everyone, hey, Tim Sutton, what's your greatest run ever?
My greatest run ever? That's easy for me. The Tararua 1500s, and that this is a run that sort of consumed 3 years of my life. I first heard about the idea shortly after I'd done the first SK, the main range SK, And I'd heard that Colin Rolfe had done it and had a sleep. So the terror is there's 15 peaks over 1,500 wow. metres. And they start way up near the top of the SK with a peak called Logan, and then work their way down the eastern range, down the Wairarapa side, and with a couple of big dog legs out to the side to get a few of them. And you get all the way down to the 14th 1,500, which is Angle Knob, which is just near Jumbo, where the Jumbo Holdsworth yes. Trail Race is. And you've only got one left to go. But then you look across from Angle Knob, and that other one is Pukimomo, Mount Hector, which Pukimomo means Hill of Desolation.
Friendly.
And that's it's really fitting when you see how far away it is. So it's basically what you've just done all over again to get across to the other side of the Tararua range to get this last 1,500. And so I first had a go at it a year after the main range, and got all the way to Angle Knob, did some calculations and worked out that I didn't have enough food to get me through the middle part of the range. I'd taken a bit longer than I planned and pulled the pin there. And then a year later, I was probably the fittest I'd ever been, and didn't muck around as much, but I got to the start. I had a thudding headache all the way out, and got to the start, and I couldn't keep any food down right from the start. Got lost in heavy clag off the side of the hill in Leatherwood, and it was just one thing after the other going wrong. And so I ended up pulling the pin, and still had a 6-hour run to get back out. And so finally, the year after that, I decided I'd give it one more shot, because you've got to do a lot of mental preparation before you go into something like that, especially having had two right. failed attempts. And so I went back, had a good friend, Dave Allen, who has also completed a sub 24 SK, drive me out. And I think that in itself, knowing that I had a mate who'd drive me 3 hours out of Wellington, and had the faith that I could actually do it, put me in the right frame of mind for it. And so I went into that last attempt knowing that unless I had some sort of catastrophic injury, I'd get it done no nice. Matter what. And so yeah, it was a big day. I got to Angle Knob, and it was amazing. The weather was stunning, and then the wheels started falling off, dropping down to Powell Hutt and down into Totara Flats, and I still had to go all the way across the range. And so it was just a matter of turn right and into the range before I had time to think about it any longer. And so 28 hours after I'd started, I stumbled out at Otaki, having been the first person to run the thing
wow.
in one go.
Brilliant.
Wow.
That's incredible, Tim. Wow. No, yeah, that's 28 hours. It's a long, yeah, okay. You just adventure where you yeah, are, don't you? And that's fantastic.
Absolutely. I think that I could spend another 20 years and I still wouldn't right. know the Tararuas.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just love that you do that without expecting anything, without getting a finisher's medal. You know, that was your thing to do, and you did it. And
I just want to see other people.
Yeah, and you
out
stuck at it,
hey,
and you knocked the bastard off.
I'll write these things up, and if anybody reads it and goes and and has their own adventure as a result of that, then my job's done.
Fantastic.
Hey, thank you so much for your time. Fantastic. We really appreciate it, and it's just, you know, inspiring and uplifting and exhausting.
Yeah, and I think it's inspiring in the sense as well, and one last thing, we'll let you go, you know, but like, it's inspiring in the sense of like, get out the door. You know, it's not like, oh, and I was in Tanzania and I peaked this mountain and the sun came up, it glinted off a giraffe's horn or whatever. It's inspiring because we all know where you're talking about, and you're talking about your back garden. So I think it sends that message.
Yeah, and it's there and it's waiting. It's there and it's waiting, and it's easy to get into. And I think that's the coolest thing.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right. Awesome, fellas. Hey, really appreciate it.
Oh, easy, man. We'll see you soon. There we go, Tim Sutton. I mean, like, when you discuss, when you talk about running and all its many forms, and then you think about that truly adventurous sort of pitting yourself against, be it a distance or a goal, without the constraints and relatively safe constraints of like an ultramarathon race where everything's kind of taken care of, it adds a whole new dimension to the, and you know, sleep deprivation and doing things overnight and all that sort of stuff.
And all the planning and... I feel a little bit pathetic ranting and so enthusiastically about my park run in Melbourne now.
No, but... it's all part of it, man. It's all relevant, you know?
Yeah, of course I don't. That was... Anyway.
What a guy.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in.
Yep. We'll be back next week with another interesting conversation with an interesting runner. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen...
We're going to be hitting the books this week.
Nearly died.
Yeah, we're going to be hitting the books, studying.
Pleasure. Hitting the books.
Studying.
Books.
We're on social media.
We're interviewing George Martin.
Yeah.
He wrote Game of Thrones. Anyway.
Not George Foreman. Made the George Foreman grill.
We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. Email at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at other podcast platforms. And you can download direct from our website, dirtchurchradio.com. Also, if we're not where you want us, let us know. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. Also, if you like what you see, please spread the love. It'd be really great if as many people heard the show as possible, and for that, we need your help.
Yeah, and we could come up with an invisibility cloak.
To cover cars.
Yeah.
But don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you.
Do that, because we are short of them. We've said that for the last couple of weeks, and like hardly
we're being ignored.
Listened. You just, it's like you're not even listening.
You should be like one of the Robinson twins and go on a Twitter rant about it.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yeah.
And then have to apologise later.
Thank you to our guest, Tim, this week.
Yep. Thank you to our sponsor,
Ultra. Yep.
And thanks to our editor, Kieran. Good play in the basketball tournament, buddy, as well.
We've got another really...
So embarrassed now.
Another really great guest lined up next week. So tune in then.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.